Okay, so this afternoon, our first talk and our last talk in session one is Natasha Hurley-Walker from ICRAR, and she is talking about, as you can see, 27 new SNRs found with the Murchison Array. So Natasha, take it away.
Thanks very much.
15-minute talk.
Of course. Thank you very much to the organizers as well for having me here to talk to you today. This is a bit of a change of tack from the rest of the session, which was mainly focused on early time supernova remnants. I've spoken to a few people here about older supernova remnants. We all have a different definition of that. Some of the ones here are going to be old for anybody, but they're all probably old compared to the ones that we've just been discussing. So I'm a radio astronomer, an observational radio astronomer, and I'm learning a lot here about the X-rays and theory and modeling. So I'm really hoping to talk to lots of you. And if you have ideas about where to take this research, then please do talk to me afterwards. So as you can see, I've discovered 27 new supernova remnants, and I'm going to talk you through, starting with the very basics of what we see in the radio. There we go. And this I stole from Gloria and Giacchini's very nice review paper on radio supernova remnants. So what we're looking at with radio is, of course, the synchrotron emission from the expanding shell. And you get various different morphologies depending on the type of supernova remnant. So from your classic shell-type supernova remnant, I saw this very nice paper on modeling the ISM around these blowout-type remnants. You've got powered supernova remnants from a pulsar wind nebula in the middle, projection effects causing interesting multiple shells, and of course helical nebulae like W4.33. So despite all the discussion today about X-ray and optical, 95% of supernova remnants are actually detected in the radio. So we have found only about 300 of these. I think Dave Green has the latest catalog, but he's presenting a new catalog on one of his posters. And there's still only about 300 supernova remnants known in our own galaxy, which is about an order of magnitude fewer than we would expect, based on the number of O and B type stars, and of course looking at the Magellanics and other galaxies. So the thought is that perhaps most of this is just due to selection effects. We don't have the resolution to disentangle the remnants in the very confused radio galactic plane. We don't look quickly enough with the observation time that we have. We're limited by the surface brightness of existing radio telescopes. They don't see the fainter remnants. There's a lot of older work which really entangles the thermal and non-thermal emission and has trouble discriminating between remnants and H2 regions based on the quality of the infrared data. We might not be looking at the right frequencies, and we might not be looking at wide enough bandwidths. So my work has been trying to address this in the last couple of years. So how have radio supernova remnants been found in the last couple of decades? I'd say these two papers, Brogan et al. 2006 and Lauren Anderson's 2017 paper, give a really nice example of what we typically do. So you're looking in the radio for areas which on the left are blue and on the right are red. Thank you, people, for not having a non-standardized color scheme. But you're also looking for areas where there is no infrared. So if there's radio and infrared, then you're looking at thermal emission. But if you just see the radio and there's no infrared, then you're looking at non-thermal emission. And that's what we want to see, the telltale sign of synchrotron. And therefore, in a spherical shape, it's looking like a supernova remnant. Now, all of these surveys were done at a single frequency. So it's quite tricky. You can't always see the spectrum of that non-thermal emission and determine whether it really is synchrotron. So enter Gleam. This is the galactic and extragalactic all-sky MWA survey. You can blame Brian Gainsler for the acronym. He's not here to defend himself. And it's been running for since about 2013. And all the results today that I'm going to show you are just from a single week across 2013 and single year across 2013 and 2014. It's a low-frequency radio survey covering 72 to 231 megahertz with a very low resolution, especially compared to what we've just been talking about, of just 2 arc minutes. Most of the publication highlights so far are to do with the extragalactic sky, although there are a few galactic interesting things about H2 regions in there. And this is the first time that we've looked at supernova remnants and we've got the papers nearly published. So I'm just showing you 4,000 square degrees of our total 30,000 square degrees. And this, of course, is our galactic center with Sagittarius A just in there. And we're looking across a range of about 345 to 60 or so in galactic longitude. And this is plus or minus 10 degrees in galactic latitude. So what I'm showing here is like an RGB false color with the red showing the lowest radio frequencies and the blue showing the highest radio frequencies across the Gleam band. This particular data is not yet available, but it will be in July when the paper is published. We're just through the final referee comments now. And it took a lot of care and attention to get an interferometric measurement of this region, because there's structure on all different scales, so various imaging techniques like multi-scale cleaning were required. So this is very beautiful and very rich data set. Now, if you just look in a single frequency band of Gleam, you're kind of in the same boat that you were with previous surveys, in that there's just one frequency, so it's hard to disentangle what the different objects are. On the plus side with Gleam, we do get most of the extended emission. We're seeing things from 2 arc minutes up to several degrees. So you don't have that problem where you're not sure whether you're resolving out large structures. So you can sort of convince yourself, oh, there's some circles and things. And if I just plot the known supernova remnants, you can see there's one here, and one here. But there's lots of other intriguing structures in this image. So that's where the full bandwidth really comes in handy, because you can then start to see that some regions are very blue. They're very much thermal. They're brighter at the high frequencies. They're dimmer at the low frequencies. And if we overplot the known ones in green, I've overplotted the ones that I've detected in purple. And this beautiful sort of shell out here, you can see it has this orange color to it. It's non-thermal. So it's a really beautiful way of finding new supernova remnants. Now, how does this stack up when we look in the infrared? This is WISE data on the left. It's just a little bit burned out here. This isn't real. And you can see that where the purple circles are, there is no infrared emission. And that's exactly what we want to see. So that's all very qualitative. And I want to emphasize that everything else that I'm presenting here is not just, I saw a circle and it looked a bit pink. I've written some software to do the sort of photometry for these remnants, where you can draw a little circle or, you know, whatever shape you like, polygon, around your remnant. You can exclude regions that you think have contamination from H2 regions and so forth, and then you can pick some areas that you do want to use as the background measurement. And then on this side, you get the spectrum with flux density on the y-axis and frequency on the x-axis. The red is the background and the black is the supernova remnant. So you're accurately subtracting the background at every frequency, and that gives you these beautiful non-thermal spectra. So it is a quantitative analysis, but I'm not going to show this for every single remnant. So to come back to that area that we'll be publishing very soon in this region, these are the known supernova remnants in this area. If I overlay all of the candidate remnants that other people have found and are not sure about, that with cyan circles, you can see there's actually around 300, I got these from Dave Green again, possible candidate supernova remnants. I looked into these and confirmed about 15 of them, but many are still indistinguishable or are clearly H2 regions. And overlaying on this, the new ones that I've found. There's also the Thor candidates, I'll go back one, I can say it, the H1OHRRL survey by Lauren Anderson and collaborators. But those are so small, they're all very small VLA detections that you can't actually see them on this plot. So we're kind of looking at a different population here. These are larger remnants. There's also another part of the data release, which is the sort of the other side of the galactic plane, also above deck minus 50. And although it's not really coming out well here, there's two new supernova remnants in a region that was previously completely devoid of supernova remnants. So we're starting to explore this very, very low surface brightness remnants. So this is the table of fun data, which you can look at when the paper comes out, hopefully next month. And this, of course, is a beautiful rogues gallery of all the different objects. And they, unfortunately, you know, because we're looking for things that haven't been seen before, they do tend to be less obvious. You know, they're really the fainter and more diffuse types of remnants than have been detected before. So Just going through some of the statistics of these remnants, I did mention that I'm fitting non-thermal or power law SEDs to all of those spectra. If you look at the spectral index distribution, these are the known supernova remnants from Dave Green's catalog. And the y-axis here is the fraction of remnants. I haven't discovered as many as there are in the catalog, obviously, only about 10%. And so this is the new stuff here. And you can see that they're all steeper spectrum remnants. Now, of course, part of this is going to be a selection effect. I'm looking at low frequencies. These objects are brighter at low frequencies. But it also speaks to the fact that there really are not very many known at all at these steep spectral indices. So perhaps, you know, these older and fainter things, the electrons, the electron population is more low energy electrons. And so we're really starting to see like the final phases of these supernova remnants' lives. I'll come on back to that in a second. The other plot that I'd like to show you is the surface brightness of these objects against their distance in terms of galactic latitude. And it's quite clear that we're very confusion limited within the low galactic latitudes, as you'd expect given those images that I showed you. But the raw sensitivity of the MWA is quite high, and scaled to 1 gigahertz, this object, G0.2 minus 9.7, is the faintest supernova remnant ever detected in terms of surface brightness. So there's more discussion of this in the paper, and I hope to bring that to you soon. Now, in order to do any physics, of course, you need distances for these objects. And that's really difficult with radio observations. These are not fine enough spectral channels to do spectral lines of any kind. And following up large objects like this is time-consuming and not something I could fit in the first paper. So the go-to method, of course, is to just find pulsar associations, get distances from those pulsars, and then have a look at both the characteristic age of the pulsar and what age is the supernova remnant if it is that size, based on simple set of Taylor calculations or radiative if it's that old. So I'll just take you through some of the highlights. Some of the associations are not very good because these objects are large and there is a high density of pulsars, so there's a strong chance of chance alignment. But for some of them, the association chance is really good. So this is my favorite. This is the faintest remnant that I have in the sample, or indeed ever discovered. There's a rotating radio transient near the center, and if you work out the distance and therefore the diameter and therefore the age, to me, it's a young supernova remnant. It's less than 9,000 years old. Unfortunately, this pulsar doesn't have a period derivative, so I can't get a pulsar age estimate, and also the accuracy was very poor, so I don't know whether that's really in the middle or somewhere around here. But in any case, it's far off the plane. The association is very good. This is one of the two in that new latitude range. There's a pulsar near the middle. The supernova remnant age estimate and the pulsar age estimate are really nice. They agree really nicely and a decent kick velocity. And this is the other one in that new range. Unfortunately, I only have a pulsar age for this one, so it's around 200,000 years old. Maybe, depending if you believe pulsar age estimates, which can be off by a factor of 20. So, no. And one remnant, I might have found a new pulsar, not through its pulsations, but because there's a steep spectrum source right in the middle, and the morphology of this remnant is very much a filled shell, a bit like the crab. However, it's incredibly faint. You know, it's not a bright remnant like the crab. So this is exciting, and I'd like to follow this up further. So that's a sort of quick run through of some of my sort of favorite items from this new paper, new sample of 27 remnants. I have all the data on my laptop, so if you want to come and see more of them, then please do afterwards. This is just a quick plug from my poster outside and the work that I'm hoping to do over the next few years. So the survey that I just showed you was done with the original configuration of the MWA 128T. This is just Google Maps with the location of the antennas. All over the Western Australian desert. The maximum baseline here is only 3 kilometers, so the resolution is just 2 arc minutes. But we expanded the telescope, and we now have 5.5 kilometer baselines, which gives us a resolution closer to 1 arc minute. So we're performing a new survey with this better, more high resolution instrument, and in combination with the original data, it'll give us a really nice picture of these radio supernova remnants. As well, of course, as decreasing the confusion in the galactic plane, which is vital to finding the fainter and smaller objects. So I'll leave you with a little beautiful composite image we put together for the Glean data release. Thank you very much for your attention, and I'm happy to take questions.
Thank you. How do you deal with the different UV, this is a bit of a radio technical question, how do you deal with the different UV coverages or the different scales probed by the frequencies at your end?
Yeah, so the fractional bandwidth is about 200%. So as you say, there's a factor of two difference in resolution between those two frequencies for the longer space line. So for structures which are sort of less than 4 arc minutes, we don't really have a good measure of them at the low frequencies. But there are no structures that are so large that we're resolving them out at the high frequencies and not still seeing them at the low frequencies. So in this core here, the tiles, the shorter space lines, are literally a hand's breadth apart. So the structures that they can see are sort of 5-10 degrees at any frequency. And I'm not looking at any objects that big, so the flux densities can be compared, as long as you do a good background subtraction. You can, of course, truncate the UV coverage and make maps like that, but your signal-to-noise drops because you're not including as many baselines. So because of the UV coverage, it's not a problem, is my short answer.
Yeah, have you looked at the younger known supernova remnants like Vela Junior I'm seeking that was discussed this morning? It has a really poor radio map when you look at the 800 megahertz or 1.4 gigahertz. Have you looked at it? Because at lower frequency, you will expect that it will stand out more out of the background. And it's a degree scale, so your resolution is super good for objects that are extended.
Yeah, for sure. So is that the youngest supernova remnant you're saying, 1.9 plus 0.3? No? Or just
Vela Junior, I was saying.
Oh, Vela Junior. Okay, so there's fun.
Vela Junior or other, there are several like that.
The regions that I'm looking at, basically, we split the survey between myself and Melanie Johnston-Hollett, and she's looking at the region that contains Vela Junior. So I can't comment on that remnant, but I would say that there are many known supernova remnants in this data release, and I'm only one person, and I have not looked at them all. So I'm really hoping that people take the data and use it to explore these known supernova remnants.
So all those data will be released, you said that it was split in two, but everything will be released at once on the website?
Yeah, so you can get the extragalactic sky now, because that's been released since 2017. But I'll be releasing, not Melanie's range, but everything between galactic longitude 345 to 60, and everything between 180 to 240. That'll all come out in July. The referee liked the paper, so it's just a matter of doing the corrections.
Could I ask that you give your name when you ask a question? We're such a big group, it might help us to get to know each other a little better. So, another question here.
Rino Bandiera, his name. And my question is, I'm here.
Oh, sorry, sorry.
My question is, I understand that, if I understood correctly, you have derived the distances using the sigma-d relationship.
No, pulsar relationships. I don't really have a good faith in the sigma-d relationship. I think there's a lot of selection effects there.
But yes, okay.
And the slope can be fit in so many different ways.
So then you can check whether these supernova remnants are typically under luminous and by which extent?
Yeah, I need more distances so that I can make sweeping conclusions. I only have 6, of which I would trust 4. So it's pretty small number statistics. There's definitely work to be done in looking at the populations, but at the moment, to make conclusions about the steep spectrum population, we need to get distance estimates that are more reliable. So if you want to help me with that, then come talk to me.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, I think we better move on. Maybe just one quick question. Are your distances just kinematic distances, is that correct?
They're just from pulsar associations.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay, no more questions.
Okay, one quick one.
Radio morphologies before you declare a certain structure as a supernova.
Yeah, so I do go through that in the paper, and I because of the low resolution, yeah. I can't tell you more than whether I think it's a shell or whether it's filled. But that one near the end, 350 point plus 51, you can, I haven't had time to do it, but there's a beautiful fall off. You know, it's definitely centrally brightened. So modulo the resolution that I have, I do make comments on the morphology.
Okay, let's thank our speaker again.